all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Welcome to Synchronicity on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You might also be listening on CFBX in Kamloops, CFIS in Prince George, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network, or also on Blog Talk Radio. And today we have a very special local guest. We're speaking today with Erin Hawks, and she is the author of When Quietness Came, A Neuroscientist's Personal Journey with Schizophrenia. And super synchronicity. I actually just saw her on the cover of the Georgia Strait today, which is totally unplanned for this interview. But congratulations. Hi, Erin. Hello. Erin. Okay, we seem to have lost Erin. I'm going to throw on another song here while we find her. And we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
Christ in you I see, light pouring forth from you I bless, everything that you are.
you are. You are love. I see Christ in you. I see a light pouring forth from you. I bless everything that you are.
And welcome back to Synchronicity. Aaron, are you there? Hello. Oh, we seem to be having some phone difficulties here. Aaron, are you there? Aaron, hello? Okay, I'll keep the music going.
Love, I see Christ in you. I see a light pouring forth from you. Everything that you are, you are love. I see Christ in you. I see light pouring forth from you. I bless everything that you are. You are, I see love.
And welcome back. We're going to try one more time. Hi, Aaron. Are you there? Huh. Okay. Hi, Aaron. Are you there? Aaron. I can hear something happening here. Okay, I'm going to play another song. Okay, we're testing again. Hi, Aaron, can you hear me? Aaron, can you hear me?
She's still home?
Yeah. Okay, this is magical technical problems. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Ah, so no one could probably hear me on the air talking. I wonder if anyone could hear you that whole time. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, we seem to have fixed the problem. Thank you to the CITR team. Yay! This is community radio at its best. Would one of you please close the door for me? Thank you so much. Okay. So now I have to wonder if anyone could hear me this whole time that I'm talking on the air. Thank you so much for your patience, Aaron.
No problem. I'm glad it worked out.
Yay. Okay, so this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You're listening to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. You may be listening on CITR 101.9 FM or in Kamloops at CFBX, Prince George at CFIS, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network and wherever you are listening from. Thank you so much for being with us. Today's guest, Aaron Hawks, is the author of When Quietness Came, A Neuroscientist's Personal Journey with Schizophrenia. And just a super synchronicity here, we didn't set up the timing for this, but Aaron is on the cover of the Georgia Strait today. So congratulations on that. How are you doing with the new book?
It's great. It was just launched in June, and already I've had so many people interested in talking to me about it.
Yay. So as reading your book, I know that some of the symptoms of your schizophrenia are some less social symptoms. And so I'm wondering, is it really stressful for you to do all these interviews?
I worked through the issues a lot when I wrote the book, mm-hmm. and I was involved heavily with the editing, so I've read the book over and over and over again, and I'm very comfortable with what's in there, so I'm quite able to discuss it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of, I'm sure your schedule is getting more and more busy as people hear about this book. One of the most wonderful things is that you're just so candid about your experience. So for people who aren't familiar with schizophrenia, would you give us a bit of a description from both a mental health consumer standpoint as well as a neuroscientist's definition? What is schizophrenia?
Schizophrenia is a break from reality. The symptoms are divided into two categories. There's positive symptoms, and it doesn't mean they're good. It means something that is above and beyond what normal people experience, such as hallucinations, hearing things. I heard voices talking to me, which is very common for schizophrenia. And then there's delusions, which can range from thinking you're Jesus Christ or the FBI's after you. For me, it was I thought rats were in my brain, eating my brain, and that was very distressing. There's also some negative symptoms, which are things that are lacking that more normal people would have, such as some cognitive dysfunction, memory problems, disordered speech, things like that.
Thank you, Erin. And so what is it that you're hoping to achieve with your book, When Quietness Came?
I want to reach out to three main populations. One is the general public. I found so many people are curious. I tell them I have schizophrenia if it comes up. And more often than not, they're curious and say, well, what is that? I don't really know what that is. So I'd like to reach the general population, of course. And then there's also family and friends of people with schizophrenia who really want to understand this disorder more so that they can help their loved one. And then there's also I'd like to reach professionals, psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses, the people who deal with people with schizophrenia, and let them know what it's really like to be inside. The neuroscientist in me says, well, there's dysregulation of certain neurotransmitter levels, especially dopamine, in certain areas of the brain. That's a quick summary.
Thank you, Erin. And so I'm curious now, it took you, which is very typical for people who are just starting to be symptomatic with schizophrenia, it took a really long time for you to get the right diagnosis. And I don't want to give away all the book because people mm-hmm. should go out and buy it, but tell us a little bit about, I mean, it must have been frightening to not know what was wrong with you. In the book, you talk about how these voices in your head, I mean, we all talk about the inner voice inside, the running commentary. So you assumed that that was just normal for everyone. And for some reason, other people had a better handle on it. When did you start to realize that this wasn't the normal voices that everyone else hears?
During my second hospitalization, it was a long hospital. It was my longest one. It was over 4 months. This is back in Nova Scotia. And the psychiatrist there started to ask questions, and slowly I would tell her things that I thought were normal, and she would say, no, this is not normal. This is part of schizophrenia. And it just continued from there. When I finally got my diagnosis of schizophrenia, I researched it a bit and was surprised. I'd read the symptoms and I would look down the list and I'd say, oh, I've experienced that, and that and that and that. And it just, it made sense finally.
And so was it a sense of relief to get diagnosed, or what did the diagnosis mean to you once you were labeled with that?
At first it was a relief because, like I said, all these different things that I didn't connect, like hearing voices and delusions, I had not connected those before. So being able to look and really see under a diagnosis all these experiences I had. But then it was also a little distressing to hear that I had a disease that will likely keep me on medication for life, possibility of relapses, side effects. That is discouraging, but I try not to focus on that because I know it won't help to do that.
Wonderful. It's, I mean, in spite of, and maybe even possibly because to some degree of your illness, I mean, you've achieved great levels of success in your academic career.
Studying was always a really good coping mechanism for me. If I was feeling really depressed or bothered by the voices and the delusions and things like that, I would just study as hard as I could. And that got me through. I did my undergrad and had A-plus average. My master's I finished as well in neuroscience. So I couldn't always focus, but a lot of the time it was just a way of trying to tune out everything else.
Mm. Well, it's time for a break right now, Erin, so
okay.
I'm going to put you on hold for a second. Right now, we are speaking with Erin Hawks. She is the author of When Quietness Came, A Neuroscientist's Personal Journey with Schizophrenia. She's a researcher at the University of British Columbia. This book is also available at the bookstore at UBC, as well as on Amazon.com. And this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we'll be back in a moment.
Darkness. Imaginary cities.
Darkness turned to light.
Back from their international tour.
When I found
this Winnipeg band is known for being exuberant and anthemic at times, moody and soulful at others. Don't miss Imaginary Cities, live at the Waldorf on July 12th. Buy your tickets at livenation.com, Ticketweb, or charge by phone at 1-888-222-6608.
This year, the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of Canada and Abbott Canada are launching a new scholarship program in support of inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, and student care. The organizations will extend 7 one-time scholarships of up to $5,000 Canadian to students living with IBD who are entering into or currently attending a post-secondary educational institution. For more information and eligibility, please visit ccfc.ca.
The 35th Annual Vancouver Folk Music Festival comes to Jericho Beach Park July 13th to 15th. From Dan Mangan, The Head and the Heart, and Hey Rosetta, to the voice of Tunisia's Amel Mathluthi and Mozambique's Wazimbo, there are artists you know and love, plus a world of amazing music to discover. 3 evenings, 2 full days of music and magic. You want to be there. Info and tickets at thefestival.bc.ca. Supported in part by CITR 101.9 FM.
My name is Natasha Raya. I'm a robot now. I'm playing with my breast again. Nothing to do, nothing to do. Sometimes I listen to Misery Hour with Hans Close Wednesday at 11 before midnight. I don't think I like it.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Erin Hawks. She is the author of When Quietness Came, A Neuroscientist's Personal Journey with Schizophrenia. Welcome back to the show, Erin.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And so I'm not sure how aware you are about the content of this show, but it's a show about spirituality. And so I actually wanted to talk about the deep meaning that you talk about in your book while you're having these delusions. What is that like for you? And I'm curious if you have an opinion on how that might be different or similar to people who have, I'm using air quotes, more regular spiritual type experiences.
It was not based in reality at all. And I was convinced that I was the only one who had access to this deep meaning. So it's that's quite different from another religious group or something. It was just for me. It was concerned mostly with the negatives. It wasn't, you know, it didn't help me live a better life. It just got me.
Mm-hmm. And so, are you comfortable sharing a bit about you're the first page of your book. You're getting ready to hang yourself.
Yes.
Because this deep meaning, the voices are convincing you to kill yourself, and it's not that you want to die, that you're depressed. It's that there is some deeper significant meaning, according to your delusion, that will have an impact on the world. And so can you describe what that was like for you and how, I can imagine that as a very bright, analytical-minded person, it must be difficult to wrap your head around how you could believe these delusions, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, I'll go to when I would be in the hospital and talking to doctors, and I would say to talk to them about the rats in my head eating my brain, or I would talk to the nurses saying, "Oh, I can't take that medication; it has rats in it," and they would just get so exasperated at me. They'd say with me, they'd say, "Aaron, you're a neuroscientist. Rats cannot be in your head. Rats cannot be in these pills." And I was just under the influence of the deep meaning, which said it was, and the deep meaning felt that it was superseding all these so-called scientific explanations.
So it sounds like what happens in your brain? Does a part of your brain shut off when the psychosis comes, the logical side of your brain? What happens from a neurological standpoint?
I'm not sure which exact brain areas would be involved, but it wasn't so much a switching off of my logical mind, but rather I wrote a short paper for about this for Schizophrenia Bulletin, and I talked about how being rational is taking your evidence and making a logical decision from that. So normal people have no voices or delusions or paranoia telling them what is reality. But with the input that I had, the voices, what they said, the delusions, the deep meaning, that was my input. And so I acted logically based on that input.
Okay, that makes more sense to me now. And
okay.
Thank you so much. And I'm trying to be respectful of my mother actually was schizophrenic. So
really?
And so I was able to sort of see, like I could tell when she was becoming unwell. Mm-hmm. But of course, and we never had a discussion about what it was like for her. And actually, you mention it in your book, how a lot of times it's classified as a nervous breakdown. And I remember when I was a kid, people would ask me, "Well, what's wrong with your mom?" And I would say, "Well, she just has nervous breakdowns sometimes." Because I would see, like, okay, life would get stressful, and then all of a sudden she would start to act strangely, and then she'd go in the hospital. And until I knew the diagnosis of schizophrenia, which wasn't until I was in my mid-teens, that's how I characterized it. So tell us about the nervous breakdown aspect of it for you.
For me, well, I had from 2001 to 2005 or 6, I had 12 hospitalizations, and almost all of them were what the doctors say decompensation due to medical noncompliance, which is basically saying I stopped taking my medication, symptoms returned somehow, whether by my psychiatrist or the police, someone would get me into the hospital.
And now what happens? There's a lot of symptoms that are associated with these medications. So while they can be highly effective in managing the symptoms of schizophrenia, there's also a big downside. So I can imagine that the general public might have a judgment of, well, if this person knows they're supposed to be taking their medication, they should just take it. I mean, what happens in your mind to justify you going off your meds?
There's a big word, anosognosia, which is basically blindness to your own disability or disease. And it's actually quite common in schizophrenia. A lot of people with schizophrenia don't think that they're ill. They're not able to compare their actions and reality compared to the average person, and so don't realize the discrepancy. So it's... sorry, I lost my train of thought.
No worries.
What was the question again?
So we're talking about what makes you go off your meds.
Yeah, thinking that you're fine, you're normal. Sometimes the voices will tell you to stop. And then, one of my prominent symptoms is memory loss. So please excuse my, sometimes I just go blank.
No worries. Take your time. Do you need me to repeat the question?
Yeah,
again?
Yeah.
So we're talking about why you would go off your medication. Some are the symptoms of the medication, also not thinking that you're ill. Are there any other reasons why someone with schizophrenia might go off his or her meds?
The side effects can be quite distressing. One of the medications I was on made me very, very sedated. Well, I was on an extremely high dose, so it's not surprising. But I would sleep at night at least 14 hours a night, and then still not able to function without falling asleep at my desk at school or work. That was a big reason for me to go off that medication, because I just hated how sleepy it made me.
I can imagine, especially with how high functioning you are in the other areas of your life, with school. I can imagine that would be really distressing.
Yeah.
And so I have so many questions, and I mean, what do you feel is the most important point to get across today? Where would you like to take this conversation?
Well, like I said in my book, and I mentioned to you earlier, reaching those people, that's why I turned my book, or it began as a journal, just a personal journal, and I let some friends read a little bit of it, and they said, "Oh, Erin, this, can you make this into a book?" And so that was my main goal, was to say, I have a story that needs to be heard, and here it is. So it's reaching out to other people to give them hope, to give them understanding, to give them make them learn compassion. Also, that there's a lot of hope. I mean, I was at various times described as severe schizophrenic, refractory, which means it doesn't get better, medication resistant, meaning medication won't help me. Eventually, I did get on better, newer antipsychotics, which have allowed me not only to function at a basic level, I've actually just begun a full-time job at UBC in science, and it's overwhelming, but I'm doing it. And it feels really good.
Wonderful. And congratulations to you on all of your success. And I'm curious, what are some of the ways, in addition to medication, what are some of the ways that you manage your symptoms and take care of yourself when life gets overwhelming?
I make sure I get lots of sleep. That's a big one. Because when you're lacking in sleep, that can really stress your body and therefore your brain. Lost my train of thought again.
That's okay. We're talking about self-care.
Okay. In the context of...
Managing your stress.
Managing my stress. Probably the biggest one is just making sure that I do take my medication, that I don't let being busy or stressed be an excuse to skip. Sorry, I'm just having a blank moment.
No worries. And I really appreciate you being so open and honest about, you know, your mind going blank and stuff. So many times people will make up an excuse or kind of not let on that anything's going on, and they'll just start talking like they know what's going on, whether you have a mental health issue or not. So I appreciate your candor and just being so honest about your experiences, both in your book and also right now on the air.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, and I may have sort of covered this already, but I'm wondering how you would characterize your schizophrenia when you're lucid compared to how you might describe it when you're more symptomatic.
Well, when I'm symptomatic, I don't put hallucinations and delusions in the same category necessarily again. I just experience all these different symptoms, and I don't say, oh, this is the whole symptomatology of schizophrenia. Whereas when I'm well, if I start to get a little paranoid, I'll be like, oh dear, that's what happens when I get ill. I better make sure that I'm taking that I don't forget my meds and that I think it through. I remember now what I wanted to say earlier was in learning how to deal with stress, I've taken through my mental health team a metacognitive course. It's quite intense. It's twice a week for 8 weeks for I think an hour, and it teaches you to think about your thinking. And it's geared towards people either with depression or bipolar or schizophrenia. And we do little exercises to help us get us really grounded in always checking. So now when I hear a voice, I look around and I say, oh, is there a person that matches this voice? And if I see someone who's talking to someone else nearby, and I'm like, oh, maybe I just overheard them. Whereas if I don't see anyone near me who that the voice belonged to, if there's just females around and I know it was a male voice, then I'll be thinking, okay, Aaron, that's a voice. Don't pay any attention to that.
So it sounds like this class is teaching you to question your reality throughout the day.
Just a reality check and that with yourself, and if you're unsure of yourself or just as a good habit, would be checking in with others. Oh, did you hear that? Whatever I just heard, and then the person will say yes or no, and that helps ground someone.
And Aaron, thank you for that. And I'm curious how your schizophrenia has impacted your interpersonal relationships. How has that been for you?
I was married and left because my husband became abusive, and he knew quite well about my disorder, and at the end would really mock me for it, you know, like calling me psycho and sicko and things like that. So that was very negative. I'm with a wonderful man now, engaged actually. And
congratulations.
Thanks. And he says he can't get, he doesn't want to know too much about what it's like when I'm ill. He's never seen me very sick because I've been so good at taking medication since I met him. He supports me immensely, but he's like, he's heard bits and pieces, and he said that it just distresses him so much that I was in those situations that, you know, if he learned all about it, he wouldn't be able to stop crying for me. So it's, you know, you've got the two extremes there.
And so I'm curious, I can imagine, if I was in your shoes, I'd be worried about how he's going to cope if you do have a relapse.
I just have to trust that if that happens, he'll be there.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering now, sometimes, many times, part of mental health teams, they come up with like a safety plan, and you mentioned how one of the things is you're checking in with your reality, so it's almost like preventive, so you notice, okay, I'm feeling paranoid, so I'm going to check in with my doctor and make sure my meds are working, make sure I'm taking them. Is there anything else that you do as far as like, now I'm trying to formulate my thought and how I'm going to put out this question. I'm just really, really curious, and I just really want to have more understanding of your experience, and you describe it so wonderfully in your book, and at the same time, it's still difficult to wrap my head around what that really must be like to not be in touch with reality at times.
It's terrifying sometimes. You just don't know what to do.
Well, I'm curious now. You mentioned that you haven't had a relapse for a long time. So does schizophrenia tend to lessen in severity with the longer that someone's on treatment, or how does that work from a medical standpoint?
That's not something I've really looked into. Everyone assumes, oh, you're a neuroscientist, so you must know all about the brain chemistry and everything that's going on in your brain on and off meds. And I've, a bit like my fiance, I don't want to know too much. It's just a bit too scary. There's always, psychiatrists like to keep people on, you know, the minimal effective dose of medication. And currently I'm on one of my medications far exceeding that, but I don't want the dose to be lowered because why mess with something that works? So it could be that I don't need as much medication as I used to. That could be true, but I'm just too afraid to try. Because in the past, most times that my medications have been lowered, often by doctors in hospitals, at the very end of my stay, thinking that I'm stable, and then they send me off home with less medication, and no wonder I'm back in the hospital in a month or two.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine that. I mean, you've said it yourself. It's terrifying to be in the midst of psychosis, and I can imagine that it would be this constant weight of, am I okay today? Am I going to be okay tomorrow? I mean, maybe do you try just not to think about that?
When I get ill, I can't think that way. There's not quite a line. There's a fuzzy gray area between, okay, I'm checking in with myself. Okay, I'm being a little delusional. Okay, how can I counter that? But once you slip past a certain point, you have that blindness and you don't see that you are acting according to your schizophrenia. You are in that other reality and you think that reality is true. And so you don't have the check-in of, am I paranoid? I mean, the one question I love from psychiatrists is, are you delusional? I mean, come on.
That's funny because, like, obviously if you're delusional, you're not aware that you're delusional.
Exactly. And they say this with all the sincerity and their pens on their paper. And yeah, I find that one pretty funny.
That is funny. And so I'm curious now, what changes would you like to see? Because when you went into the hospital the first time for a suicide attempt, they didn't even ask you. They just assumed, oh, well, she's suicidal. She must be depressed.
Yeah.
So what are some of the major changes that you would like to see, or even maybe that you have seen in your experience with the healthcare system? What changes would you like to see in with that aspect of your care?
Well, as you've read in my book, I was often put in restraints, very often given injections of antipsychotics and sedatives, and just left handcuffed to hands and ankles, handcuffed to a stretcher for hours on end, or put in an isolation room for a week. And those measures make me an easier patient to manage, but I think, and they do have a place, I believe, but they can be certainly overused.
And I can imagine, I mean, it would be horrible enough of an experience for someone who is lucid and not delusional, mm-hmm. to be handcuffed or put into isolation. But if you're experiencing paranoid thoughts and delusions and voices, mm-hmm. I mean, the terror must be just exponentially magnified.
It is. I'd see the nurses off filling their syringes, and I was convinced it was full of rats. and four security guards are holding me down and tying me up, and then I get injections, and I could feel it, all these little rats going up from the injection site into my brain, and I was just, I'm a very quiet person and don't raise my voice very much, but I would scream and yell and cry, just so terrified, so helpless. And it came to be that, you know, after a certain number of hospitalizations, once the unit knew it was Aaron Hawks coming in, they would, even before I was through emergency, they would get a stretcher out and put the restraints on it as the first line of treatment for me.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry that you were treated that way.
Yeah, it's, people don't find it hard to believe that in our so-called enlightened medical age, you know, we don't do that. But it, I mean, sometimes they did it because they were short-staffed and they couldn't deal. I was someone, to get the rats out in the hospital where I don't have something to cut with, because the rats would leave by bleeding them out. I would bang my head against the concrete wall until I would be bleeding off my forehead. So they would restrain me so I wouldn't do that. So I understand that. But if there had been enough staff that someone could have sat down with me, talked to me, listened to me, I think a lot of that could have been avoided.
And so do you think that this is a symptom of, like, not enough funding or not enough education? I imagine it's a combination of things.
Yeah, a combination. And especially since when I had the diagnosis of chronic or severe refractory schizophrenia, then the staff would look at that diagnosis and be immediately ready to deal with the diagnosis, not the person.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine that, yeah, I mean, even just the labels that we put on each other. I mean, even when I was reading your bio that came along with your book, mm-hmm. it labeled you as schizophrenic. And it's so easy for us to just say, oh, that person is schizophrenic, or that person is crazy, or whatever. And I don't say that with any disrespect. Mm-hmm. And so what is your experience of being labeled? I mean, how does that feel to you when someone looks at you and sees your disease rather than you?
Yeah, that's why a lot of people make the distinction being a schizophrenic or a person with schizophrenia. Just a little difference in the wording, and it means a lot different. It's, in some ways, labeling is accurate. It does connect you to a certain set of symptoms that do explain a lot of things. But on the other hand, it's, the person is just so much more than their schizophrenia.
So, Aaron, I'm curious, do you feel like there's any benefit to your schizophrenia? Is there, and I don't want to make light of this, the deeper meaning on the delusional standpoint, but do you have any belief around this having a bigger meaning and for help for other people?
Well, my therapist often says that I make a lot of lemonade, and that's just part of who I am. I've been given this. In my book, I talk about, you know, schizophrenia taking a lot away from me, but I refuse to let it take anything that it doesn't. I refuse to give in to it. And so I turn around and I say, okay, I've been through all this and I have these stories to tell and I need people to understand this. So I've turned it into something very positive, a book, and getting a message out that a lot of people can't. I feel that I can be a voice for a lot of people who aren't able to write a book about it or talk very much about it.
And so now I'm curious, and if you're not comfortable answering this question, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Do you have any spiritual beliefs aside from the delusions?
I call myself an agnostic, which isn't surprising being a scientist, just meaning you can't know. if I hear someone who's had a religious experience or near death experience, and I'm not convinced, because I can say, well, you know, maybe this part of your brain was just being a bit overactive for a while, and yeah, I'm very, very scientific in that respect. But that said, I do believe that scientists and anyone else who believes in more of a scientific approach, you have to have faith that science does explain things. And so I would guess that's where my faith is that reason and the scientific process can teach us truths about our universe.
Wonderful. I kind of feel the same way. I classify myself as agnostic as well. It's not that I have a disbelief in God. I mean, I do believe that there's a universal energy that connects us all. And I also believe that one day science will be able to explain all the things that we can't explain right now, that we classify as spiritual. And just because science will be able to explain it doesn't make it any less spiritual in my mind.
Right.
So, well, I have taken up so much of your time today already, and I really appreciate you spending the part of the hour with me. I'm wondering if there's anything that you want to add or anything that I haven't asked about that you feel is really important to get across today.
I'm writing another book.
Oh, yay.
I love to write. I just adore writing. And, well, you read in my book that I've struggled with an eating disorder.
Yes.
And for me, the eating disorder, as well as the other psychiatric symptoms and medications, for me, have impacted each other. And so I'm interviewing people who have or had both an eating disorder and some sort of psychiatric medication or illness. And I just really want to see how people put the two together and how they influence each other. So if I could plug my next book, I'd say if anyone fits that description, would they be able to phone your station and you could give my information?
Is there a phone number or an email that you'd like that's public that you can provide?
Sure. I'll get my phone number. It's 604-773-4449. And the interviews are either by phone or email if you're not comfortable on the phone. So thanks for letting me plug my next book. I've done some interviews and I'm looking for more.
So do these people have to be local? Because this mm-hmm. goes all across the world.
No, anywhere.
Okay.
Anywhere. I buy the phone cards and I call them if they want to do it on so it's no cost to them.
And so, Erin, now, do these people need to have both an eating disorder and a psychiatric disorder, or can it be one or the other?
It's an eating disorder with the combination of taking, at some point during their eating disorder, psychiatric medication, not necessarily a diagnosis. And even the eating disorder does not need to be diagnosed, because so many people have eating disorders who they know themselves that their eating is disordered, but they just don't have that formal diagnosis, and that's okay.
And so what do you classify as psychiatric medication? Antidepressants, antipsychotics, mm-hmm. all of that?
Yeah, anything that's meant to reach your brain.
Okay. So even if someone takes like trazodone as a sleeping aid, would that count?
Sure, sure.
Yeah? Okay, cool. All right. So again, Erin Hawks. And so if you have an eating disorder, whether it's diagnosed or not, and you've taken any kind of psychiatric meds during that disordered eating period, you can give her a call at 604-773-4449 if you want to participate and help her with her next book, which I'm sure is going to help even more people. Schizophrenia is what, 1 in 100 people are affected?
Yes.
And eating disorders, I imagine, is much, much higher.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And so just a quick question before you go. From the eating disorder and the psychiatric meds, are you looking at it more of a standpoint of the medication is not able to fully get into the body because of the disorder, or?
I'm trying to not come up with conclusions before I have all my data.
Okay.
I'm sort of just gathering a whole bunch of data, and then when I have enough, I'm going to read through it and detect themes, like what stands out, what have eight people told me the same thing about it. So I'm trying to not be too biased in the beginning. And of course, for the book, sort of the backbone of the book will be my own experiences, and I'll be writing about my own experiences.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Erin, for your time today. Your book is, there are parts of it that are inspiring, parts of it that are shocking, definitely educational. Everyone should, in my opinion, should read it. If you have any questions about what it's like to live with a mental illness, definitely people in the medical community, the counseling and therapy community. Anything else that you want to add before we wrap up?
Just to say, like you said, it's available at the UBC bookstore and chapters online, Amazon, Kindle. Lots of ways to get it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time and good luck with your new book. In addition to the book, is that what your research is about at UBC right now, or is that different?
I'm doing something a little different. I can't talk too much about it.
Oh, okay.
I shouldn't.
All right. No worries. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Erin. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So again, that was Erin Hawkes, and she is the author of When Quietness Came, A Neuroscientist's Personal Journey with Schizophrenia. When I heard about this book, my mother had schizophrenia. I just felt like I had to read it and I had to talk with Erin. So I know it's been a little bit of a diversion from the light and fluffy happiness and butterflies that we normally talk about on the show. But I feel like it's so important to get a perspective of people who are living with mental health challenges. Schizophrenia obviously is on the severe end of the spectrum, but mental health is really a continuum, and anyone can be impacted by a mental health issue or a mental illness at some point in their lives, depending on, you know, life events or how well they're taking care of themselves, and all of that. Eating disorders, drug addictions, all of that can impact our mental, physical, and spiritual wellness. So thank you so much for being with me today. And I hope that you'll check out her book on Amazon or at the UBC bookstore. Again, it's called When Quietness Came, A Neuroscientist's Personal Journey with Schizophrenia. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. This has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I will be back next week. And I mentioned last week that I'm going to be doing a book giveaway. I have to get the survey going because I want everyone who enters to fill out a little survey just to give me a little bit more information about you and how I can better serve you with this show. So keep listening when I find some time and discipline to sit down and put it all together. It will be out, and I'll be giving away probably about 10 books. I think I'm going to do like a seasonal book clear out contest. So keep listening for that. I will get on top of it soon in the next couple of weeks. Thank you so much for being with me. I want to send my love to you. I want to send my love to Erin, today's guest, for her courage in being so open and honest and sharing her experiences. And I feel like the more we're able to be authentic in ourselves and just honest about who we are, it gives other people permission to be authentic as well. So if that's where you're coming from today, I want to thank you for shining your light and sharing your talents and truth with the world. I'm feeling kind of emotional right now. I don't know. I guess maybe it's hitting a little close to home because of what I saw my mother go through, and I just really have a lot of empathy for Erin's experience, even though it's still hard to wrap my head around. So thank you so much for being with me today. I want to send my love to you. Be well. I love you so much. Namaste.
To reach across miles and know that you are there. It's an amazing gift to call you up and know that you care. As if no time has gone by, as if all the years and months have dissolved into this sweet moment. Thank you for being the friend you are. It is your trust that has brought us this far. An unconditional love so pure that I tremble. Brought us this far, an unconditional love so pure. I cry.